It has become common to say that people are less educated than they used to be, that facts no longer matter, and that misinformation has replaced knowledge. That idea feels true because it matches what people see online every day. The noise is constant. The arguments are everywhere. But what feels obvious is not always accurate. And when you look more closely at who is actually talking, sharing, and arguing in public spaces, it becomes less clear whether ignorance is widespread or simply more visible. Most people are not spending their time debating politics, science, or history online. They are working, raising kids, paying bills, managing health issues, and trying to keep their lives steady. Their relationship to information is practical. They read what they need. They know enough to get through their day. They are not trying to persuade strangers or build audiences. Because of that, they rarely show up in public conversation. What fills that space instead is a much smaller group that speaks often and confidently. Accuracy is not the requirement. Consistency and volume are. Platforms reward repetition, strong opinions, and simple claims that are easy to share. Louder voices travel farther. Quieter voices disappear. Over time, volume starts to feel like size, and visibility starts to feel like agreement, even when that is not the case. This creates a distortion that is easy to misunderstand. When people see the same false claims repeated over and over, they assume many people believe them. When confident statements go unchallenged, they assume others agree. When no one corrects the record, they assume people do not know better. In reality, silence often means disengagement. Many people do not argue because they have learned that arguing rarely changes anything and usually costs more energy than it is worth. Education sits awkwardly inside this problem. There are real declines in some areas, including civic knowledge, reading ability, and critical thinking, especially where schools have been underfunded or pushed to focus narrowly on testing. At the same time, access to information is higher than it has ever been. More people can reach data, research, and explanation than at any point in history. Both of these things are true at the same time, and the tension between them is where confusion grows. What people may be reacting to is not a complete failure of education, but a loss of trust in how knowledge is created and shared. Institutions that once explained, filtered, and validated information no longer carry the same authority. People are left to sort through complexity on their own. Some do that carefully. Others do it loudly. The system rewards activity, not accuracy. This is why confidence often replaces competence in public spaces. Education teaches caution, context, and limits. Online platforms reward speed, certainty, and repetition. People who understand complexity are more likely to hesitate. People who do not are more willing to speak decisively. Over time, this flips perception, making knowledge look rare and ignorance look dominant. The result is a general sense that nothing feels solid anymore. People feel surrounded by misinformation, but cannot tell how many actually believe it. They feel outnumbered, even when they may not be. They feel disconnected from public conversation, even when they are informed. That feeling leads many to pull back, which only makes the loudest voices seem even larger. The real question is not whether education has collapsed, but whether systems meant to teach and explain have weakened at the same time that attention systems have amplified noise. Understanding how that happened requires looking beyond individual beliefs and toward the long-term changes in education policy, accountability, and public trust that reshaped how knowledge functions in everyday life. The changes that reshaped American education over the last 50 years were not driven by a decision to weaken learning or lower standards. They came from a series of policy choices meant to solve real problems as they appeared. Each change addressed a specific concern, but over time those decisions added up, quietly changing how education worked and how knowledge itself was measured and trusted. In the mid-1970s, the federal government became more involved in education with the passage of the Education for All Handicapped Children Act. The goal was access and fairness. Students with disabilities had been excluded or underserved for decades, and the law required schools to educate all students regardless of need. This was an important correction, but it also introduced new legal requirements, documentation, and oversight. Schools had to spend more time proving compliance, which shifted attention and resources toward process and paperwork. During the early 1980s, the focus shifted again. Federal leaders reduced direct control and returned more authority to states and local districts. While public concern about academic performance grew, that concern came into sharp focus with the report A Nation at Risk, which warned that American education was falling behind and framed the issue as one of national competitiveness. The report did not create policy on its own, but it changed how people talked about education. Schools began to be judged more by results than by conditions, and performance became something that could be measured and compared. That way of thinking expanded through the 1990s. Federal education laws were reauthorized with increased funding, but more expectations attached. Schools were encouraged to adopt standards and assessments. Programs meant to support disadvantaged students remained in place, but success was increasingly defined by measurable outcomes. Teachers and administrators were expected to show progress through data, even as classrooms grew more complex and instructional time competed with testing and reporting. This approach became most visible in the early 2000s with No Child Left Behind. The law greatly expanded standardized testing and tied funding to performance targets. Schools that failed to meet benchmarks faced penalties. The intention was accountability and fairness, especially for students who had been overlooked. In practice, it pushed schools to focus on what could be tested and measured, narrowing how success was defined and how learning was prioritized. At the same time, federal investment in education research and data systems increased. The idea took hold that good policy depended on constant measurement and comparison. Knowledge became something that could be tracked, ranked, and audited. Subjects and skills that did not fit easily into standardized testing received less attention, while test scores became a stand-in for overall school quality in public discussion. After years of criticism, later reforms tried to adjust the balance. The Every Student Succeeds Act gave states more control and reduced some federal mandates, but it kept the basic structure of testing and accountability in place. Schools were still expected to prove progress through standardized measures, even as responsibility shifted around them. Similar changes were happening in higher education. Federal student aid expanded access to college and training programs, increasing enrollment and participation. At the same time, costs rose. Degrees became more common but more expensive. Credentials multiplied while their connection to clear outcomes became less certain. Education was increasingly framed as both a public good and a personal investment, complicating how people thought about value and return. None of these policies were designed to discourage learning, curiosity, or critical thinking, but together they changed how education felt. Schools became more accountable to metrics and compliance than to local communities. Success was defined more by indicators than by shared understanding. Trust in institutions relied less on long-term credibility and more on regularly reported data. These shifts happened alongside broader social changes. As institutions emphasized efficiency and measurement, public confidence weakened. When results did not match expectations, explanations became technical and difficult to follow, pushing people further away from systems they no longer felt able to judge or influence. Education began to feel less like a shared process and more like a managed system that produced outcomes people were told to accept. The overall effect was gradual but important. Education did not collapse, but it was reshaped into a system that valued visibility, compliance, and performance over trust and long-term understanding. Knowledge could exist without authority. Credentials could exist without confidence. Thoughtful silence could be mistaken for ignorance rather than restraint. These conditions matter because they shape how people relate to information long after they leave school. When education focuses more on measurement than meaning, it produces a public less likely to argue carefully and more likely to disengage. In spaces that reward loud certainty, that disengagement can look exactly like ignorance, even when it is not. The changes in education did not create a public that forgot how to think. They created a public that learned, often without realizing it, when thinking was rewarded and when it was not. In school, students learned how to meet benchmarks, show proficiency, and move on. Outside of school, they entered a media and information environment that rewarded speed, confidence, and repetition. The way knowledge was learned no longer matched the way it was expected to be shown. For many people, especially those educated before heavy testing and accountability became dominant, learning was still tied to depth and context. Understanding something meant taking time, asking questions, and accepting uncertainty. For others, particularly those educated in systems shaped by constant measurement, knowledge became more practical and transactional. It was something to demonstrate, score, and complete. Neither group is less capable, but they were trained under different expectations about what knowledge is and how it should be expressed. When these differences show up in public spaces, they are often misunderstood. People who are comfortable with uncertainty tend to hesitate. They speak carefully or not at all. People who are comfortable performing confidence speak quickly and with certainty. Online environments reward the second group, not because they know more, but because their style fits the system. Over time, this makes it seem like belief has replaced knowledge, when what has really changed is how expression is rewarded. This effect is amplified by the attention economy. Platforms promote content that spreads easily. Content spreads easily when it is simple, emotional, and repeatable. Nuance slows things down. Context makes messages harder to share. Silence looks like absence. In that environment, people who understand complexity often choose not to engage, not because they do not care, but because engagement feels pointless or exhausting. As a result, public conversation fills up with voices that feel no hesitation. Claims are repeated until they sound familiar. Familiar ideas start to feel widely accepted. Loud positions begin to look like majority opinion. Meanwhile, most people watch rather than participate, which reinforces the illusion that only one way of thinking exists. Education did not create this situation, but it did little to prepare people to push back against it. For those who still value learning and accuracy, the experience becomes alienating. They can recognize misinformation, but they also recognize the cost of challenging it. Correcting others takes time, emotional energy, and patience. Many decide it is not worth the effort in spaces where arguments rarely change minds. Their silence is a practical choice, but it is often mistaken for ignorance or indifference. Institutions respond by simplifying even further. As trust declines and polarization grows, messaging becomes shorter and safer. Slogans replace explanation. Metrics replace meaning. Authority becomes something that is performed rather than earned. Education's role as a shared point of reference weakens, not because learning has disappeared, but because the systems that once translated learning into trust no longer work well. What people are experiencing is not widespread ignorance, but widespread misreading. Noise is mistaken for belief. Silence is mistaken for absence. Confidence is mistaken for knowledge. Many people know more than they appear to, but they are less willing to speak in spaces that punish hesitation and reward certainty. This misunderstanding has real consequences. It deepens frustration with public conversation. It hardens assumptions about who is reachable and who is not. It encourages people to pull back from civic life, which only makes loud voices seem even more dominant. Education becomes the target of blame for a problem that has as much to do with attention, incentives, and trust as it does with learning itself. The real risk is not that people no longer know how to think, but that careful thinking has become harder to see in the places that shape perception. When restraint is invisible and excess is rewarded, public life begins to look less informed than it actually is. That gap between how things look and how they are is where frustration grows and where disengagement takes root. What this leaves us with is not a collapse of education, but a system that no longer lines up with how information moves in public life. Schools were reshaped to focus on access, accountability, and measurable results. At the same time, media and communication systems evolved to reward speed, confidence, and repetition. Each change made sense on its own. Together, they created a situation where knowledge still exists, but authority no longer travels with it the way it used to. This helps explain why arguments about education often miss the point. When people say facts no longer matter, they are usually not saying that learning has disappeared. Schools still teach, colleges still grant degrees, research still exists. What has weakened is the link between knowing something and being trusted when that knowledge is shared. There are fewer shared reference points and less agreement about who or what counts as credible. As that link weakens, loudness starts to stand in for legitimacy. People who speak often and with confidence are treated as knowledgeable, even when they are wrong. People who speak carefully or cautiously are treated as uncertain, even when they understand the issue well. The system does not correct this because it is not designed to. Attention flows toward what is fast and clear, not what is careful and durable. Education moves slowly by design, and it struggles to compete in that environment. This changes how people behave. Many stop trying to persuade others. They stop correcting false claims. They stop explaining what they know, not because they doubt themselves, but because the effort no longer feels worth it. Engaging takes time and energy, and the payoff is often low. Choosing not to participate becomes a practical decision, even though it makes ignorance appear more widespread than it really is. Institutions respond by simplifying further. Messaging becomes smoother and less detailed. Slogans replace explanation. Numbers replace context. Authority is projected through presentation rather than built through clarity. These choices are meant to rebuild trust, but they often have the opposite effect, reinforcing the sense that information is being managed instead of shared. If this continues, the gap between education and public perception will keep growing. People will feel surrounded by misinformation while underestimating how much knowledge actually exists around them. Silence will be mistaken for apathy. Loud voices will be mistaken for majority opinion. Education will be blamed for problems that are rooted as much in attention systems and incentives as in classrooms themselves. This pattern does not require a dramatic collapse to continue. It sustains itself through habit, through people choosing not to engage, through repeated decisions to stay quiet in spaces that do not reward thought. Over time, public discussion starts to feel like something to tolerate, explained, rather than something to participate in. Knowledge becomes private rather than shared. The real danger is not that people forget how to learn, but that they forget how to recognize learning when they see it. When careful thinking looks like silence and confidence looks like truth, perception begins to replace understanding as the main source of authority. Education still functions, but its influence on shared reality weakens. What emerges is a public that appears less informed than it is, more divided than it may actually be, and more disconnected from its own ability to understand than the evidence suggests. That appearance matters, because how people think things are shapes how they act. When enough people believe public discourse is broken, they stop trying to fix it, and systems that reward noise continue without resistance. This is not a failure of intelligence. It is a failure of alignment between how knowledge is learned, how it is shared, and how it is rewarded. Until those systems begin to support one another instead of pulling in opposite directions, the illusion of mass ignorance will be easier to sustain than the quieter reality underneath it. One story, one truth, one ripple at a time. This is the Ripple Effect, powered by the Truth Project.